Yo, welcome to the Late Lunar Chronicles. I am your host, Isaias Lunavidaris, and today we're going to have three very special topics to go on today. We're going to be talking about the new Rise of Skywalker trailer that just dropped yesterday, and we're going to be talking about the Twitter social media trend that has a lot of people going on there to promote their entrepreneurial jobs and businesses and gaining revenues via that. And we're going to be talking about the crouching to the Chinese dragon thing we got going on over here in America. American companies submitting to foreign governments. Now, let's begin, ladies and gentlemen. I want to first start off by saying that I apologize for my absence for the past couple of weeks. It's been a trying time for my family with our situation. My father's still in jail, and everyone that was arrested or put in incarceration is out. My family is safe, but my dad's still in there, and we're having to deal with the fact of that. But I really don't want to bore you guys or just bring you down with my problems. We're going to talk about something cheerful today, something that we all like to hear: Star Wars. Yes, the Rise of Skywalker trailer came out yesterday around, I believe it was like in the morning after the Monday Night Football. Like during the halftime show, they did the ads and they rolled the new Star Wars trailer. And in it, we got a peek into our favorite character from the prequels, Papa Palpatine, aka the Senate is back in session. This guy is possibly the greatest villain of the Star Wars franchise, and Disney bringing him back is a pretty good move on their part. Considering what Snoke's, albeit fall from grace, from the beginning of The Force Awakens all the way up to the controversial The Last Jedi, it seems like Bob Iger and Kathleen Kennedy have decided to move forward and go past a mistake that they made, and one that was really capitulated on by Rian Johnson's style of cinematography. Papa Palpatine is played by Ian McDiarmid, a well-known and well-acclaimed British actor. He's very talented for being in theater, just being in the BBC, and also playing in really foreign films. But his most notable role to the American audience would be him playing Senator Palpatine, aka the Emperor, aka Darth Sidious. When everybody found out that he was coming back for the movie, people were speculating what was going to be his role in it. And it was only until this trailer that our theories and suspicions were confirmed. A lot of people called out during the D23 trailer for Star Wars that they pretty much are teasing that Palpatine is coming back. I mean, we've got the Death Star coming into play more so, just like the Return of the Jedi. And now we have just this explosion of spoilers coming through with the trailer. I mean, we have the fight between Rey and Kylo basically on the outskirts of the Death Star's wreckage, and we see them together in that one image, both in the throne room where Sidious was with Vader and Luke during the original trilogy, during that last movie. It's just a callback. There's a nice series of callbacks to the original trilogy, and I think they're trying to create more or less a general vibe of bringing Star Wars back from this low point that we all felt from The Last Jedi. And having the villain who basically started the whole conflict of the Skywalker saga be in this last movie is paramount to the success of the franchise as a whole, because after the Skywalker saga, we're going to be getting new movies. We're going to get in the Old Republic trilogies, and we're going to be getting a plethora of Star Wars shows on Disney Plus as well. So having to close out this chapter, this long chapter in the franchise, is something that needs to be tightened up. And having Palpatine be the center, well, rather the focus of the movie, is really good. But some people are kind of complaining and criticizing that Palpatine is just being brought back in because Snoke is written and literally out of the picture. I mean, he's dead. His character's dead. And people always speculated that Snoke was just a possessed body that Palpatine used. And when we saw Palpatine basically float, not even touching the floor, this guy is so boss that he basically is stuck in a chair and he uses the Force to float in it towards Rey in that shot of the trailer. And he's better suited to being a big bad than Snoke was, because the original concept for the sequels after the original trilogy was a little bit similar to Episode 9. Because in Episode 9, we all had basically this culmination of the entire story of the sequels and the originals and the prequels being wrapped up together. I mean, we even have a few Easter eggs pointing to the comic books that a lot of fans love. That whole fleet of Imperial class Star Destroyers is a nod to the old comic books, because in the comic books there was, I guess you could call it, a section of the storyline that had this big ominous threat of an Imperial fleet that had Death Star weaponry on it that could basically destroy entire planets. And Disney brought back that same idea and used it in Episode 9. So that's getting on the fan side already. They're already winning support that way. It's good to see that we finally get at least some imitation or some revival of the old Hydra fleet from the comic books being put into the film. Because now that's going to tie in well with putting Palpatine in there, because we can't really put our favorite senator from Naboo in the film without really expanding on why his importance is the focus of the antagonism between him and the Resistance. Because as we see, Kylo Ren is more or less stuck between the light side and the dark side, and the interviews with Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver and J.J. Abrams basically says that Kylo's at a point where he's moved away from the kid who was struggling to be like his granddad, Darth Vader, in The Force Awakens. And he's moved past the guy who was on his, basically suffering his huge failure from being defeated by Rey in The Force Awakens. And he basically has to prove himself in The Last Jedi, and he does so by realizing that he doesn't need Snoke anymore. He just needs to follow the dark side more so. And that chapter is over. What we're seeing in the movie is going to be the culmination of Kylo Ren's journey. He is going to be at a point where he is set in his beliefs. He's set in his way as a darksider. But there's still that pull, that tiny flicker of light that hasn't been expunged yet. Because he still has that connection with Rey, and he still has his mom, Leia, who's still alive. Albeit Carrie Fisher is not here with us anymore. May she rest in peace. Wonderful actress and a wonderful woman that we will miss for the ages. And bringing back Lando Calrissian is a good nod too, because that will add in a completion for the original cast from the original trilogy being put back into the sequels. Because now Lando is basically going to come back and save the day again, like he did in Return of the Jedi. Albeit, now we have to say goodbye to C-3PO. And that heartfelt shot in the trailer, where he's basically saying that he wants to have one last look at his friends before he says goodbye, that's another nod to the actor of C-3PO. He's a wonderful actor, he's a wonderful man, and I cannot express just how much he made this character, this droid, such a comic relief that we all could rely on throughout the entire saga. I mean, he's going to be missed. Later on, we see the, the throne room for Palpatine. It's just this Game of Thrones-style chair, basically. It's this stone slab cut into these sharp pieces of like one area that he can sit in, and it looks so dope. I mean, go to Twitter, go to Facebook, go to YouTube and look up Palpatine's chair in The Rise of Skywalker, and you'll see that this is just straight up out of Game of Thrones, and it really is taking inspiration from that. Albeit Some people are still sore about Game of Thrones. Understandable, yes. But I mean, it's a good nod to see that Star Wars is willing to go and take risks this way and use it to increase our excitement for the film. I'm very excited for it. At the same time, though, I mean, we have to give credit to the critics as well, because there are no scenes in the trailer where we see the Knights of Ren. The Knights of Ren have been a big point for Disney in its handling of Star Wars, because it basically had J.J. Abrams create this character of Force users that basically follow Kylo Ren, but we have basically little to no information about their identities, who they are, where they come from, and at this point we're still speculating. We already have the images from the magazines that came out recently showing concept art for the Knights of Ren in production, but there really is no information beyond what we see them carrying or wearing or where they are in the film. We do know that they're going to be in the film for certain. They're going to play a much bigger role than they did in The Force Awakens, which is to say that they're going to progress in character development a lot in this, which is a lot to take on. I mean, what we got from the last two sequels is kind of sparse concerning the Knights of Ren. At this point, we're just waiting for J.J. Abrams to basically give character to characters that are basically blank slates at this point. There's really no sense in just putting characters there just to be, I guess, one term for it is stand-ins for Sith, and not put them with important roles. We have to find out what this group is, whether they serve Snoke, whether they serve Palpatine, whether they serve mainly Kylo Ren, who is the supreme leader of the First Order right now, after, you know, cut Snoke in half. And we have to get that information from the movie as soon as possible, because having the reveal of Palpatine being confirmed to actually be in the movie physically with this trailer as evidence, that's going to hold over fans, but it's not going to hold over the critics, because they're still going to point out, no Knights of Ren, they're bringing back Palpatine just because Snoke was a bad villain that Disney didn't know how to handle or write. They're having to make up for basically the mistakes that were made with the two sequels, them being just these cameo inspiration pieces that really felt like copy and pastes from the other movies. And these are all reasons that the critics are going to try and not watch this movie, and it's going to hold them over until the movie comes out and people see it. And a month or two goes by, and by that point, the critics can be like, okay, I lied. I went in, basically watched the movie to review it, though. And other critics are going to be like, dude, that was the most awesome movie I've ever seen in my life. And other one is going to be like, well, it's just Star Wars, you know? If I watched it or not, it's something that I could just get out when it comes out on Redbox or on demand. It's exciting. The excitement is getting to everybody, including me, because the movie is so close at hand. It comes out December 20th on a Friday, and the tickets are selling out like hotcakes since they opened at Monday Night Football. Like, literally an hour after the trailer dropped, Disney released the ticket prices to the theaters, and people went buying these tickets nonstop. I mean, well on its way to fast track to being one of the highest grossing films of the year, and it possibly may even beat the box office for holiday. It may beat the holiday box office. I'm gonna make that clear right now. I don't really have any insight over whether or not the box office come around December is gonna be really populated with good movies or not. I mean, people have been telling me to watch Terminator, Dark Fate, and say that I go do that. At that point, I'm going to have to review all the movies up until the holiday box office in order to get a clear picture. But at this point, I'm still going to put my hat in the ring and say that The Rise of Skywalker is going to beat the holiday box office. I guarantee you it's going to. Now, heading over to another sweet topic. Let's talk about Twitter and the entrepreneurial opportunities afforded to young college students and young entrepreneurs. Everybody's been really, well, in a manner of speaking, people have been sort of latching on to the idea that social media is very pivotal in creating a entrepreneurial business. And one person that's gotten that, at least on a roll, is Kylie Jenner. I mean, it's estimated that Kylie Jenner's tweets are at least $1 million in value. So that means she generates $1 million in revenue with each tweet she puts out. And that's grossly amazing and kind of underwhelming at the same time. Because we have to answer the question of whether or not that's okay. And I know that this show has a lot of young viewers who they themselves are part of the social media trends, and they themselves are thinking about going into business with connections to social media and other markets. But the idea is that this podcast tells you an honest opinion with honest facts, and we don't lie on here. I'm not gonna lie. I don't think that Kylie Jenner deserves $1 million in revenue for each tweet. I mean, at best, she may even be worth at least maybe $500,000, right? She may be worth $500,000. But that's because she's going around with $500,000 clothes, cars, accessories, makeup, technology, and all this flash and bling around her, right? And at that point, it really just, it highlights her situation, and it highlights people like her. Because to tell you the truth, rich people have jumped on social media since its inception, early in the 2000s. And what we've seen is that the rich have gotten richer and the poor have gotten poorer. Sure, you can be a poor person and you can have social media and you can build yourself up with entrepreneurship and completely change your whole economic lifestyle and switch from a lower and switch from a poor person to a middle class person. But I mean, those distinctions, they kind of cut deep into the heart because they really separate us. And it's not to say that nothing separates us. Obviously, a lot of things do, but it's our job as humans to try and mend that process. Kylie Jenner making $1 million isn't right. Because a blue-collar worker could have a job that involves dangerous conditions, like working on skyscrapers, where you have to sign non-liability agreements if you fall off the damn thing. Life insurance policies are the same way. The next of kin has to go through this plethora of paperwork in order to get what their spouses or their loved ones or their relatives have left for them. They have to go through all this process, and at the end of the day, the government takes the small slice out of that. And that's unfair. That's unfair to a person who's poor. And when you go to taxes, it's the same thing. I mean, Donald Trump has cut taxes to rich people, right? And what Democrats and other candidates have been saying is that we need to not tax the rich at 1%, because that 1% is not something that is any good. We need to tax them at anywhere from 1% to 10% at maximum. And what that means is that we're not taking away their revenue for a whole year. We're taking a small slice out of their annual revenue and putting it towards something like infrastructure, like urban development, like housing, like healthcare, like welfare, like health services. like energy and water. What candidates are we getting on the Republican side that are doing that too? What candidates are actually being sincere about that on the Democratic side? This is something that comes out of social media. Yes, it does. The social media topic does pertain to the political ramifications of a celebrity having a $1 million revenue from each tweet. And looking at Kylie Jenner's Twitter, she ain't stopping from tweeting, right? She's tweeting anything and everything, okay? And she's getting paid for this. The ads online are basically paying her to help advertise their products, okay? She's getting all this money sitting around in doing this type of crap. But yet, a blue-collar worker doesn't get paid any sort of... He doesn't get any healthcare benefits, any welfare benefits, any life insurance benefits beyond the ones that he may have to set up for himself, which is a bitch to set up, too, at the same time. It's not easy to set up a life insurance policy. And that blue-collar worker may have maybe a $50,000 annual revenue. But out of that, what happens? He has to pay for taxes. He has to pay for taxes that are just putting more strain on him because those tax cuts to the rich are not tax cuts at all. They're basically tax breaks that Donald Trump is giving to the rich people. He's basically telling them that he's gonna take basically pennies out of their pockets, and he's gonna force the working man to take the $1,000 bills he has stuffed under his bed and put it into the American piggy bank, which has been broken numerous times, as evident by the 2008 economic crisis, the 1980 Wall Street drop, that the Wolf of Wall Street movie, written and directed by Martin Scorsese, went and called out, and the 1929 market stock exchange went improved in and of itself, which sparked this whole revival of the whole American capitalist system from head to toe. But what we've been doing for the past basically 80 years, 80 plus years, is just staying stagnant. We're not doing anything to create infrastructure or job employment. We're not making our cities, our streets, our neighborhoods any safer. And we're not making sure that poverty is being eliminated. What America is doing is they're waging a war on poor people and asking them to give them their life savings for the good of society. You can't do this to a person who is barely making minimum wage. And minimum wage is not even a sustainable lifestyle. It's not. You can barely pay your rent. You can barely pay for the gas in your car. You can barely go grocery shopping with minimum wage. College students here, even on campus, understand this. But they're taking jobs while they're living under their parents' house, while they're here living on campus at the university, or whether they're smart, their parents were smart, or the relatives were smart, or the loved ones were smart, or whoever the hell was smart enough to tell the kid who's in college, hey, I put some money aside for you, you're gonna put some money aside for you, so that when you go to college, you have some money to fall back on, and that you keep on getting jobs and getting experience, and keep on making that bank balance increase. And that's what kids at college have to do. And then you have all these debates, all these sessions, all these committees talking all this crap about how minimum wage is all right and that someone can survive on that and that it shouldn't be hard to pay taxes. It's hard because you're taking away the most essential building blocks for them to be able to pay for a tax in the first place. You're taking away their ability to pay for the food that they're going to eat, that they need for nourishment for their body to survive. You're taking away the money that they need for healthcare that you are also taking away and forcing them to go to these private companies that give no care in the world about their customers. They only care about their customers' wallets, all right? That's what they care about. You're letting infrastructure go so poor in a lot of areas of the country that basically the city has to step in and garner all these interests from these private companies, these corporations that want to go do what? The poor neighborhoods. They want to move out the poor people based on class and race. And create these high-rise apartments and condos and put in malls and put in a plethora of other stuff that is already all over the city, that's already all over the state, that's already all over the country. It's not that hard to find a mall right down the street from your house or to find some damn apartment a couple blocks away from your neighborhood. It's not that hard. It's hard if you're in a poor neighborhood. You will rarely see that. But that's only 50% of the time. The other 50% of the time, you're going to see all this high dollar stuff coming your way. And then you see more of your neighbors moving out, more of them going poor, more of them going homeless, more of them having to move states to find employment and better living conditions. Because they're being pushed out by big business with big money. So, be careful as a social media entrepreneur, okay? Just be careful. You can't think that having a celebrity status gives you any sort of grounds to say that you deserve the money you're making. If you're on Kylie Jenner's level, you do not deserve any sort of recognition for doing that. You just don't. If you're working if you're literally working as a truck driver who delivers food, who delivers clothing, who delivers technology, who delivers all the products that we buy in our stores, in our malls, online. They're the ones that help make this country supplied and kept up to date with the next best thing. If you're a healthcare professional which takes care of other human beings, then you deserve that pat on the back. If you're a military veteran and you switched over to the civilian sector and now you're a coach for a football team, a high school or college football team, you deserve a pat on the back because you've seen stuff both as a veteran and as a citizen of this country to know that you have to do your part and you deserve your pat on the back because you sacrificed enough. If you're even a landscaper, you deserve a pat on the back. Do you know what landscapers have to go through? Landscapers have to wake up at essentially anywhere from 5 to 6:30 p.m. and work until basically 8 p.m. So that means they're essentially gone more than half the day. They're gone basically 3/4 of the day. And they're working in rain, sleet, snow, in the hot sun, with humid conditions, with temperatures so high, especially here in Texas, that they can quickly dehydrate. UPS workers who deliver your mail, FedEx workers who deliver your mail, they go through the same thing. But they're only delivering stuff. But that means they have to pay for the gas that goes into their vehicle. They have to be on time to each drop-off point. They have to go right back and pick up more stuff and make more deliveries. And they have to be on time with no excuse whatsoever. There's nothing whatsoever that has them protected beyond their employment. As an employees of their company, and this is what landscapers do too. Some landscapers have their own companies, right? They basically work for these big, white class communities, okay? They help landscape around hundreds of homes for 3/4 of a whole day. That means in one day, they will work in approximately a third of a whole neighborhood. That's already almost 200 plus homes that they are visiting in one day. And if they are not visiting homes to go cut the grass, they are cutting the high-rise community's property. They're cutting the grass at the park. They're cutting the grass by the neighborhood pools. They're cutting the grass by the neighborhood mailboxes. And there are a lot of mailboxes in a high-rise community. A crap ton of them. They deserve to have a pat on the back. And so do all the other people I've mentioned. Because they have the merit, the perseverance, and the discipline, and the sacrifice to get that pat on the back. But we don't live in a meritocracy society, a society based on giving good rewards to people who do good work. People who merit rewards because they have absolutely earned it. No, we live in essentially a society that is now focusing on markets and trends and patterns and connections. It's become this sleepless, mindless beast that is not stopping. It's giving people like Kylie Jenner, who they themselves were raised since they were little babies, with a silver spoon in their mouth. And this is true. The Jenners and the Kardashians have never gone hungry. They have never gone hungry. Kim Kardashian has not gone hungry. Khloe Kardashian has not gone hungry. Kylie Jenner has not gone hungry. Tom hasn't gone hungry. No one else in that entire family has ever gone hungry in a single point in their lives. They have been bred with wealth in mind. They have been bathed in wealth. So Kylie Jenner earned $1 million for one stupid little tweet about her showing off her makeup or her exploring this country just to take a little dumb picture of a dumb little, just a dumb little picture of some fucking place that is completely obsolete and ordinary and out of the place. She just doesn't deserve that. Her only skill has been to look pretty and to bed a celebrity. She's only good for sleeping with a guy and looking pretty so that she can get paid for it. She ain't flexing. That to me ain't flexing. That's not flexing. That's barely lifting up a finger so that you can touch your phone. That's barely doing any hard work. She could sit on the couch, a $3,000 couch, by the way, which I myself have paid for before. I've paid for a $3,000 couch. They're comfy as hell. I have one in my home, but I worked my ass off to get that. And for her, she can afford 10 $3,000 couches. She can afford 100 $6,000 couches. She can afford 1,000 $9,000 couches. She can afford that. And yet, her taxes will never be cut to support the welfare of American citizens who are not as fortunate or lucky as her. And speaking of fortunes and luck, let us crouch down before the Chinese dragon and reveal the fortunes of American companies who have chosen to submit to a foreign government's policy and manipulation in order to serve themselves. Yes, we're talking about the Hong Kong movement of freedom that is being suppressed by the Communist Party in China and by American corporations who have chosen to sell their soul, which, to be honest, isn't really a soul. They're basically opening up their piggy banks and they're allowing China to drop in a few yen. Yeah, that's right. They're dropping in the Chinese dollar in them damn pink piggy banks. And let me tell you, some of them piggy banks, they ain't pink. They gold. Solid gold. That's not something, as I said before in my previous episode, that I can condone. I cannot condone that American corporations who are so American, who are so patriotic, who are so two-faced and hypocritical, doing this to people who are struggling with a humanitarian crisis on their hands. From an authoritarian regime that has systemically for years, and this is being reported by me, and it has been reported by the Cougar, which is published by the Center for Student Media here at the University of Houston. That's right. Our own college newspaper has called out American corporations for censoring for the benefit of Chinese officials. And that should not be tolerated. All right? This is something that all the way back in September, when Bliss Chung Wai Chung, a professional player for the video game Hearts of Stone, who was originally from Hong Kong, spoke out about what his city was enduring under this communist regime. And what did Activision Blizzard's, a video game company, a multi-million dollar video game company based in America, but owned by a Chinese tech company called Tencent Five. Who has a 5% equity. Who has a 5% equity in Blizzard. This American company, which has a Chinese company basically owning a large portion of it, and is doing the bidding, not just on behalf of these Chinese investors, but on behalf of the Communist Party, by banning Wai Chung from playing the Hearts of Stone game, its own product, for a year, and banning him from all competitions for a year, and banning him from gaining any competitive prize money from any competitions he was in this year. And guess what happened? People went and did an outcry about it. People went and complained. People went and said that Activision Blizzard was selling out to China. And that's true. They are selling out. They've done nothing but completely ban this player from enjoying a game that he developed a skill for, that he actually manually developed a skill for, that he had to go out of his home, had to go and buy all this technology, have to build these personal computers himself, have to basically continue to build his skill of being a competitive player for Electronic Sports, which is a video game entertainment competition that spans a variety of different video game competitions, from Call of Duty all the way over to Overwatch, and even to sports games that the NFL, the NBA, and the MLS have supported. And guess what happened recently? Recently, the Houston Rockets have gotten themselves entangled in this whole mess as well. Daryl Morey, the team's own general manager, put out a post in support of the Hong Kong protesters that he has since then deleted. But this has significantly damaged the NBA's reputation with China and the Communist Party over there. The whole country of China is basically pulling out all the merchandise dealing with the Rockets from their store shelves, all because of the general manager's tweet. But let me tell you this. Activision, Blizzard, and the NBA aren't the only companies that are crouching down before this Chinese dragon in order to better their fortunes for their own little gold piggy banks. They're not the only ones. Countless others have done this before in the past, and they've been quick to apologize about doing a stupid misstep like shooting out a tweet or writing on their Facebook wall or putting out a post on Instagram or even just offending China in any way possible, that they've had to go out and beg for forgiveness so that they don't face any economic repercussions. Let me tell you something, man. When a country that does not recognize Macau, Taiwan, or Hong Kong as independent countries and is also responsible of censoring quotes from the Dalai Lama, a religious figure important in Asia to not only a lot of Chinese people, but a lot of Buddhists, which span not only China, but all across South China, all across Southwest Asia, all across Southeast Asia, all across Oceania, the Pacific Islands, Malaysia, Indonesia. When an authoritarian regime can have this level of power and reach in its play, and nobody stops and thinks, let's not fall into the same rabbit hole with this Chinese dragon. Because, let me tell you what, that Chinese dragon ain't gonna give me good luck. It's gonna give me bad luck by swallowing whole my soul. Listen. I spit on the Chinese Communist Party. I spit on them for this level of subservience. They are being served by American corporations at the expense of American citizens, at the expense of citizens who are human, who have human rights, who have natural born freedoms that they themselves may not understand they have, but they sure as hell should have the opportunity to learn. Let me repeat that. I spit on the Chinese Communist Party. This is despicable. This is atrocious. And this is corrupt to the core. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to this special episode of The Late Luna Chronicles. I am your host, Isaias Luna Valladares, and I hope to see you again this very same week as I launch another episode in apology to my missteps over the past couple of weeks with my absence. Please stay tuned for the next episode this very same week, and I will see you then. Signing out.